Hello and welcome to the September IASB Update podcast. My name is Claire Short and I am part of the communications team at the IFRS Foundation. Today I'm joined by Andreas Barkov and Sue Lloyd, Chair and Vice Chair of the IASB respectively. In this episode, we'll look at some of the key topics discussed at the board meeting held from the 20th to the 24th of September, before turning the discussion to some other highlights from the previous month or so. We'll start things off with an update from the Extractives project. Andreas, before I ask you to explain the most recent developments in this project and why the board took a rather unusual approach, what was it like to chair your first in-person meeting, our first since the COVID pandemic forced all our meetings to become virtual?
Thanks, Claire. Having an in-person meeting after a year makes a huge difference vis-a-vis doing it completely virtually, as people know what's happening around them. I think I can duly speak for all my fellow colleagues that having in-person meetings is so much more lively and interactive. As regards sharing in person, in comparison to virtual, I note that we have become very efficient and focused with virtual meetings, so we probably all need to readjust and get too excited when being in the same room again. That said, it was great to see so much interaction, and I'm really looking forward to the next meetings. So let me turn to your question regarding our project on extractive activities. We restarted our work on extractive 3 years ago when we asked four national standard setters from Australia, Canada, Norway, and South Africa to help us gather evidence as to what the situation was. Our own staff did a lot of outreach with a broad variety of different stakeholders too. The evidence gathered was then collated and brought to our attention where it was deliberated last week. Not surprising was the feedback that there was indeed diversity in accounting for exploration and evaluation of mineral resources. In fact, that was broadly where the board left several years ago. What was surprising to us, though, was that users of financial statements, including investors, did not flag any huge concerns about the existing diversity. That was news to us and caused us to rethink our natural habit of addressing inconsistent application where we can. The board considered all arguments in favor and against engaging in full-scale standard setting activity and concluded that doing so would simply not be cost beneficial. We have been made aware of areas where enhancing transparency through disclosures could be a more suitable and less costly alternative. So the board decided not to pursue the development of requirements or guidance for exploration and evaluation activities for matters outside of the scope of IFRS 6, so in a broadened scope, as well as for reserve and resource accounting. However, the board has recommended pursuing a project that explores the possibility of adding disclosures on extractive activities. The project will be focused on identifying application problems and identifying the needs of users to avoid creating an overwhelming list of potential disclosures. I shall add another important point. The board decided by majority to delete the reference in IFRS 6 of it being a temporary standard. Now, it is important to note that the removal of the temporary exemption is not a signal that the board approves of the diversity of accounting within the extractives industry, but rather an acknowledgement that the cost of developing requirements would outweigh the benefits of doing so.
Thanks, Andreas. Over to you, Sue. The board last heard about our two financial instrument projects, which is FICE, Financial Instruments with Characteristics of Equity, and Dynamic Risk Management. You last heard about this in May, and there have been some updates on the work for those two projects. Could you describe some of the new developments?
Sure, Claire. So I'll talk about the Financial Instruments with Characteristics of Equity, or FICE, project first. So in previous discussions, we've been finalising proposed additions of some new disclosure requirements. And this month, we've moved on to some other topics that the board will consider in preparation for the likely next step of an exposure draft. So everything I'm discussing here, as for the disclosures I've discussed in the past, is all going to be out for comment. So people shouldn't panic just yet. They will get a chance to talk about it. So this month, what did we talk about? Firstly, we talked about really some practice issues for those applying IES 32 today. And we talked about practice issues around contingent events. So what do I mean by that? For example, it's when the way that a financial instrument gets settled or the timing of when it gets settled. So whether the investor gets shares in the issuer or cash and when is subject to trigger events that are outside the control of the issuer of the instrument and the investor. So, for example, a financial instrument might convert into the shares of the issuer if its capital falls below a particular ratio. So we talked about those application questions and how contingencies are dealt with by people applying IAS 32 today. And then the second part of the discussion focused mainly on the line that's drawn between contractual terms and the application of law and regulation. And this is really important in our IFRS standards for financial instruments accounting because it's based on the analysis of contractual terms and conditions. And that means that we get questions about things like whether provisions of legislation that get repeated in the terms of the contract should be considered to be contractual or not, or alternatively, what to do when the regulatory environment has an effect on the payments that will be made on an instrument that aren't stated in a contract. So, for example, if you issue ordinary shares in a jurisdiction where legislation says that a company has to pay 10% of its profits as dividends, does that become a contractual term or not? So the board discussed an outline of some principles that might be helpful to assist in providing more clarity about how to think about what the scope of contractual terms are when you apply IAS 32. And this wasn't a decision-making meeting. It was a meeting where the staff was looking for some reactions from the board and some things to think about. So this discussion on these topics will be followed up with decision-making meetings at a later date. So the staff will go away and develop the ideas based on the feedback they got from the board. So staying on financial instruments and moving on to dynamic risk management. So just a quick reminder, this is a project that's focusing on providing better transparency about how banks manage their dynamic interest rate risk strategies for portfolios of assets and liabilities. In the past, the board's developed a core model that we've been testing, doing some targeted outreach. And at this meeting, we were talking about some potential refinements to the core model that was following the feedback that we got with some concerns raised by stakeholders when we were discussing the proposals with them. So those watching the project might remember that we used to have this idea of a target profile in the core model and that the success of a company's risk management would be measured against that target profile. And in the outreach that we've done, we've been hearing that companies don't have a single target profile. And so it doesn't really resonate with how they think about things or how they manage the risk to talk about that. Rather, they manage the risk within a range of outcomes that's agreed by management. And we're trying to respond to that feedback about the target profile not really being something that reflects risk management. So in the refinements to the model that we discussed at this meeting, the staff are proposing that we introduce a new element called the risk mitigation intention, which would represent the extent to which a company decides to mitigate risk within the range of possible outcomes agreed by management. So that risk mitigation intention would become the new single outcome that would be used as an anchor point for constructing benchmark derivatives and assessing how well the bank is doing and managing their performance relative to their objectives in a similar way that that target profile did in the core model. So again, we talked about these possible refinements to the model, gave some feedback to the staff, but don't really make decisions at this stage.
Thanks, Sue. Let's turn our attention to the next topic. The board heard from the goodwill and impairment team this month, that being the first time since the IASB's joint educational session with the FASB in July. Andreas, could you go over the project plan that was presented to the board in terms of goodwill and impairment, and then after that, just touch on the developments in the primary financial statements project?
Certainly. In July, the board held a joint educational session with the FASB that included a discussion on goodwill and impairment. Immediately preceding that meeting, the board decided at the IASB July meeting to defer a decision on the subsequent accounting for goodwill and to explore first how companies can provide users with useful information concerning business combinations through disclosures, and to look for additional information concerning the subsequent accounting for goodwill. This month, the board was provided with a project plan, which will provide the board with the necessary information to make a decision concerning business combination disclosures. The plan included the development of disclosures on business combinations, as well as illustrative examples, and solicitation of feedback on both the general disclosure requirements and the specific examples developed. It further provided for an analysis of the subsequent accounting for goodwill, including determining the estimated useful life, possible transition approaches for the legacy goodwill, as well as some other topics. And the board agreed with the project plan. So to primary financial statements, the board heard a variety of topics on the primary financial statements project. We last discussed the project in July, where we solicited the financing category in the statement of profit or loss, as well as the classification of fair value gains and losses on derivatives and hedging instruments and of foreign exchange differences. In this meeting, the board discussed two topics, being management performance measures and general disclosure requirements. First, the board discussed management performance measures. The board expressed its intention to further explore many of the recommendations and decided to remove the word complements from the definition of management performance measures and state that totals and subtotals specified by IFRS standards are not management performance measures. Next, the board discussed how to structure the general disclosure requirement and decided to set out the relationship between the general presentation and disclosure requirements and the principles of aggregation and disaggregation and further develop general aggregation and disaggregation requirements, subject to considering whether the word class is the best term to use in all situations. We also decided to require an entity to explain how a disclosed class of items, and here's the term again, is included in line items in the primary financial statements, to include application guidance summarizing shared and non-shared characteristics. And we decided in relation to the disaggregation in the notes to provide application guidance that states that more diverse the items in a class, more likely the disaggregation would result in material information. In relation to the disaggregation in the primary financial statements, we decided to provide application guidance that states that more diverse the items in a class, more likely the disaggregation would result in more understandable overview. So very similarly as to the disaggregation in the notes. The board will continue its redeliberations in future meetings.
Thank you, Andreas. That concludes our discussion of items at September's board meeting. And we move on to another important event held in late September, and that was our annual World Standard Setters Conference. Held virtually for the second year in a row because of the pandemic, it was a very successful event with more than 140 delegates from 67 countries attending the two-day conference. Andreas, this is by no means your first WSS conference, but it was your first as chair of the board, and you gave a very well-received keynote speech. What was it like speaking to participants rather than being a delegate yourself, and what were the highlights of your speech?
First and foremost, it was a delight to just being again with my fellow National Standard Setter colleagues. And it wasn't so much of a challenge, really, because if you're talking about technical issues, as I said in the speech, whether you're looking at it from a National Standard Setter's perspective or from a Global Standard Setter. The key difference, as I mentioned in the speech, was really that we have to take a broader perspective as a Global Standard Setter, in that we need to consider really economic backgrounds that are far more diverse than what we are experiencing when we do standard setting from a National Standard Setter perspective. Why I think National Standard Setters are so important, I believe that they are really the board's eyes and ears. They are attached to the ground. They are far more attached to their local stakeholders. They become aware of issues that may create a bigger concern for many of us, including at the IASB. So they really are the ones that could identify issues, signal them to us, so that we then can jointly work on it and find solutions. My inaugural speech as chair covered some very broad topics. I started off with some first impressions after 2 months of being in this role. I then alluded to the agenda consultation, which has just closed, in molding our work plan for the next few years and shared my thoughts on what the board will be looking at in terms of resourcing to best roll out this plan.
Thank you, Andreas. And if any of our listeners want to read the full speech, it's an interesting piece filled with insight, and you can find that on the news page of our website, ifrs.org. Sue, turning to you, the IFRS Foundation has received quite a bit of press coverage recently, specifically around the work the trustees are doing in the sustainability reporting space. Now, you're representing the ISB on one of the project's working groups. At a very high level, can you share some of what this group is doing?
Sure. So one of the working groups that the trustees have established is called the Technical Readiness Working Group, or the TRWG for short, because we love our acronyms. And that's comprised of standard setters with a focus on meeting investor information needs. So the group is made up of the IESB, the Value Reporting Foundation, the World Economic Forum, and two climate standard setting organisations, the CDSB and the TCFD, and the International Securities Regulators, IOSCO, and IPSASB, are observers to that group. So this group is providing input to the trustees on consolidating the current landscape that comprises a multitude of initiatives, reducing the alphabet soup that you could see even in the description of the TRWG's membership. But this group is also responsible for some inaugural technical work that's going to form the basis of a set of recommendations that will be provided for the potential new sister board of the IASB, the ISSB, for their consideration. And I'm emphasising it's for their consideration because the ISSB will make its own decisions on its way forward, including what it wants to propose in terms of standard setting. But the recommendations being put together by the Technical Readiness Working Group are really designed to help the ISSB to get a running start with its technical work, because people have told us that timing is important in this space. In terms of the topics that we're looking at from a technical perspective at the TRWG, we're working on a climate prototype. We're also working on a presentation standard that would be similar to IAS1 for those familiar with our standards. So that presentation standard would set up the general requirements for an entity to provide material sustainability-related disclosures. And the TRWG is also looking at the potential architecture of the standards for the board and things like what the due process and taxonomy might look like. So it's all really interesting work, and hopefully we're moving towards a good package of recommendations to hand over to the new leadership of the ISSB.
Thank you, Sue. Work in this space is certainly moving at an incredible pace, and the trustees are well on their way towards making their final determination on whether to establish this ISSB that will focus on sustainability-related disclosures in time for the COP26 conference in early November. So keep your eyes on our website and stay tuned. Before we wrap up, please note that the board is due to publish a request for information for the post-implementation review of the financial instruments standard, IFRS 9, by the end of September. The board has approved a 120-day comment period for this consultation. The PIR will cover six topics related to the classification and measurement requirements in IFRS 9. And this is a very important consultation for relevant stakeholders to participate in. So as soon as that is published, details will be available on our website under the Projects tab. And with that, please join us next month for our discussion of the October board meeting. In the meantime, you can catch up on previous episodes of this and the IFRS Interpretations Committee podcast on our YouTube channel, Spotify, or your preferred podcast player. And if you have any comments on this specific podcast, please do email communications@ifrs.org. Until next time, keep well.